Hey, America. The rest of the world has a question. What is up with the bland beer? It's no secret that the American beer market is dominated by pale, mild beer, bland beer. Despite the rising number of craft brewers here in Michigan and across the country, our best-selling beer is Bud Light. And Coors Light and Miller Lite are coming in right behind it. Economist Runjit Dighe wanted to figure out why it is Americans like bland beer. Runjit is professor and chair of the economics department at the State University of New York at Oswego. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Your article for Business History points out that you're not making judgment calls on bland beer, right? As you say, one person's insipid is another's refreshing.
Yeah, I used to make judgment calls like that all the time, but that's when I was 20.
So your study finds that our taste for pale bland beer, it goes way back in American history?
Oh, yes. Way back. 19th century.
What was the early American beer brewing scene like?
The very early American scene was more like ale. It was very much in the English tradition, not radically dissimilar from a lot of the ales that one might get over in England right now. But it was a very small part of the overall alcoholic beverage market. In colonial days, rum was the big beverage. In early America, it was whiskey. And cider was actually more common and a lot easier to make than beer. This is up through about the 1830s. Then you have the temperance movement, which kind of shuts down everything. Hmm. It was the early temperance movement. This wasn't prohibition. This was voluntary temperance pledges. And that drastically cut the demand for whiskey. Whiskey consumption drops dramatically, and cider consumption just about goes off the table. And what happens right after that, though, is you get a big influx of German immigrants. They bring their lager beer with them, and that becomes very popular among Americans. This was a more intense kind of lager. It was a lot darker, kind of like what, if you're buying German beer, would be a Dunkel right now. Maybe not that different from, say, a Heineken Dark or a Beck's Dark that you could buy today. That's obviously a lot different from, say, Bud Light. That was popular. It was lighter than some of the ales that might have been available at the time. It was more just something that you could consume kind of at your leisure, or that had actually more than just a leisure drink, but something that you could consume, you know, at lunch and then go back to work, or have, you know, a few of in a saloon and then go back home. So that was popular. And people didn't know exactly how intoxicating that was. We didn't have, you know, ABV information printed on labels or anything like that. But people found that it wasn't getting them all that drunk, and they were happy with that. It kind of fit the needs. This was a country where you had, you know, industrialization going on and really long work hours. You know, a 70-hour week was not at all uncommon. People would go to lunch wherever they could near the factory. Often that was a saloon. If they came back drunk, they were fired. So even without a temperance movement, you would have pressure to find some kind of drink that isn't going to get you drunk when you need to go back to work right away.
So keeping that alcohol content down. Then what, take us up to Prohibition, because that surely shook things up.
Yeah, Prohibition really impacted beer a lot more than it impacted wine and spirits. One of the great myths of Prohibition is that it didn't do anything, that people just went on drinking just like they had before. That's really not true. What is true is that it was probably good for spirits consumption. Spirits like whiskey, vodka, or whatever are pretty easy to conceal. You know, people have little flasks during Prohibition that they carried with them. A flask full of beer isn't really going to do you much good. So beer was the main casualty of Prohibition. A lot of smaller breweries, all of the breweries shut down legally. And finding a full-scale brewery that made real professional quality beer was not easy during Prohibition. In areas where there was a big mob presence, like Chicago or Newark, you could get good beer, or good by the standards of pre-Prohibition. Otherwise, you're kind of on your own as far as beer went, and you probably found it a lot easier to purchase, you know, spirits that were available somewhere that were traded on a black market or perhaps wine.
Sure. Now, what about going through from between the Depression and the 30s and then with all the rationing and the home hardships during World War II, did that make an effect?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you have an economy of privation during the 1930s and during World War II. World War II, everybody had a job, sure, but people didn't have a lot that they could spend their money on. There was lots of rationing and just kind of a pressure, you know, against conspicuous consumption. A lot of the breweries were still in business. And in fact, they were producing, you know, as part of the rations that our soldiers got in World War II, 3.2% beer. So our soldiers were getting weak beer. Weak beer was basically was available back home. And people had shown a taste for weak beer. In the very first year that beer was legal during the Depression, which was 1933, this was for about 8 months or so, prior to the repeal of Prohibition itself. Beer was just, or rather the Volstead Act, which enforced Prohibition. This was passed, you know, around 1919, 1920. That was modified in 1933 to change the definition of what was intoxicating from 0.5% under Volstead, which basically excluded everything, to 3.2%. And so 3.2% meant that weak beer was legal. Mm. And when they put it back on the market, the public had an enormous appetite for it.
Not too hoppy.
Very mild beer. Right, and not very hoppy. That was sort of a separate issue. You know, like right now there's session IPAs and so forth that can be quite mild as far as the alcohol content. I just had one the other day that was, I think, 3.8% alcohol, and it was very good. But, the brewers found that the public just didn't have much appetite for hoppy beers. And this was even relative to before Prohibition, when they had become, you know, pretty mild already and not very hoppy. I think some of that was just that they weren't used to beer. They'd gone almost 15 years without access to real, you know, professional quality beer.
Good point. And then looking at, say, the past half century or so, I mean, we baby boomers grew up with Miller Lights, tastes great, less filling. And that really wasn't so much about weight, eh? It was about being able to let people, you know, drink more of it and don't get filled up.
Right. It's good for social drinking. If you're drinking beer socially, you know, it can go down kind of fast. You want to be able to have a lot of those. Like Schaefer had the campaign, the beer to have when you're drinking more than one.
Hmm.
And, yeah, less filling is kind of the same thing, that it won't slow you down. That was a slogan that Coors Light actually had. I think the FCC or the regulators told them they had to stop that because it seemed to be encouraging, you know, binge drinking or something like that.
So it strikes me that Americans, you know, we want to be able to drink beer after beer after beer at a tailgate, whereas if I'm at a beer hall in Munich, it's a different purpose. So I'm going to be able to access a much heartier, if you will, hoppier beer.
That could very well be. Also, in Europe, things are a lot more densely populated. If you're going out to the beer hall, you might not be driving home. You might be walking home or taking public transportation. In America, from a bar, you're probably driving home. With the rise of Mothers Against Drunk Driving and, you know, stiffer penalties for drunk drivers, people have to be very conscious of that. They're often going to go for what seems lighter.
I noticed as I looked at the chart in your article for Business History, lots of mentions of there's light beers and then lots of mentions of pilsners and lagers. And I'm thinking of when I was in Bavaria, in the lagers and pilsners there, are they not as bland as an American version?
Yeah, they are different. One key difference is the use of adjuncts, that is things other than just malt and hops and barley. Germany has that famous, you know, Reinheitsgebot. I think I butchered the pronunciation of that, Reinheitsgebot. Law, the Bavarian purity law, that says you can just have these four ingredients. I think it's malt, barley, hops, and water in beer. And that's kind of how it was in the mid-19th century here. Some of the brewers like Anheuser-Busch and Pabst and Miller found that people actually liked the beer better if you diluted it somewhat with things like corn and rice. That made for a weaker beer. If not in alcohol content, then certainly as far as the flavor or heartiness of it. And that's kind of what changed it. It was partly the taste that people had. There could be a number of factors. One, again, as I mentioned, that it tastes like it would somehow be less intoxicating if it's blander and if it's lighter in color. And a lot of people had to go back to work, you know, working these really long days in a tough labor market where there's plenty of people outside the factory gates. You'd be very happy to take your job if you're fired for drunkenness or what have you. It's also a little bit warmer in the States, especially, you know, toward the south than it was in Europe. So that'd be another factor why you might want something a bit paler and more refreshing.
I'm wondering, Roger, what impact do you see the American craft beer movement having on palates? It does take a while to train palates and to get people to catch on to new flavors, but what do you see happening?
Seems to be kind of a generational thing. I see a lot of young people who are drinking craft beers. Craft beers were kind of a yuppie phenomenon at one point, and you still kind of see that among older people. Someone age 50, who's blue collar is probably more likely to be drinking Bud or Bud Light, whereas someone who's age 50 and, you know, a higher income and so forth is more likely to be drinking craft beer. But at about age 20, I don't really notice that much of a difference.
Do you see a growing future for these darker or hoppy beers here?
Absolutely. They're the fastest growing segment of the market by far. On the other hand, you know, Bud Light, Coors Light, Miller Light, those are the biggest ones. And there's always going to be some kind of demand for that because those beers are sessionable. You know, you can have a nice long drinking session. You know, you can watch all three football games on Sunday while drinking continuously. I'm not saying anybody should do that, but there's lots of people who do. And something like Bud Light is much better suited to that than a double IPA is.
Very interesting look at the American taste in bland beer. Ranjit Dighe is a professor and chair of the economics department at the State University of New York at Oswego. Very interesting to get your economist take on this. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.